Very good. Okay, we are in Kippur Gimel. These are the first parts of Kippur Gimel, which really tied us to last Kippur. So now we're going to go forward. Okay. First of all, thank you. Good. Okay. So we have Kippur Gimel Pasuk Bet. At the beginning, we just said after all the things that happened before, Achashverosh Gidel et Haman ben Hamdata Agagi, he rose him up, he gave him a promotion by a friend Kisom Al Kalach from Asher Yitzo, he was in charge of all the other officers. V'cho Avdei HaMelech Asher B'Shar HaMelech Koreim U'Mishtachavim LeHaman, all the servants of the king who were in the Shar HaMelech would bow down to Haman, and we may remember that Mordechai was hanging out by the Shar HaMelech as well. Kichein Tziva LeHaMelech, that was the king's command. Mordechai lo yuchav lo yishtachav. Mordechai didn't do that. So people asked him, why are you breaking the rules? And when they would tell him day after day, and Mordechai didn't listen to them, eventually they told Haman to see if Mordechai's words would hold, because Mordechai had told him that he was Jewish. So we pause there. First of all, starting in these psukim and thinking to other things we know about Mordechai, does this ring a bell to anyone? We started talking about how Tanakh is really one living unit, and sometimes one part of Tanakh teaches us about another part of Tanakh, and there's certain, if you look at it from like a literary point of view, it can illuminate, of course, it's, Sifrei Kodesh, but Hashem in His wisdom and those who wrote the rest of Tanakh in their wisdom purposely made, connections because it's supposed to teach us something. So I don't know how much, it wasn't that long ago, actually.
Is the connection
in the Megillah? No, other parts of Tanakh. Your hint is that it wasn't that long ago, that you might have noticed it. That's just because of my hint, that's just something I know about. Okay, it is Yosef, actually. What about Eshet Potifar?
Stubbornness.
Keep going.
Give in to relent. It's in.
Yes, and look at the psukim. We're doing text-based shiur. Anything ring a bell in particular? Yes. Okay. 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 So we have this similarity of the yom vayom, of the daily repetitive challenge facing someone and him consistently refusing to give in with Yosef as well. And the Midrash acknowledges this. If you look in the Midrash Rabbah, I know I give you a ton of pages of Midrash Rabbah, let's see if I can find it. It's Zion, I'm going to look in, I cheated because I have the book with me. Zion. Give me a minute to find it. So the Midrash notices the similarity as well, and you're going to see it's not only the similarity. I mentioned later parts about Mordechai, we're going to see are similar to other things about Yosef as well. Okay, Zion. Vayhi ba'amram elav yom yom, v'yom v'yom. I actually gave you, it doesn't say those words because there was like one line on the page before. The page that I gave you, I wrote in handwritten because we learned in this class I was supposed to quote Zohar b'shem Omro, so that was cut off in the last page, so I wrote it in. Rabbi Yochanan b'shem Rabbi Binyamin bar Rabbi Levi. That's the page with the handwritten couple words at the top, if you see that. So what does he say? Baneha shel Rachel nisan shaveh ugeduatan shaveh. The sons of Rachel, their nisyonos were similar, were equivalent, and their greatness was equivalent. Hadahu dichtiv, nisan shavah, how were their tests similar? Hadahu dichtiv, vahi kedabra al Yosef yom yom. We just had that a couple weeks ago in Bereishis Lamed-Tet, where we see the same lashon used by Yosef, Eshet Potifar, kept at him day by day, day after day. And here, v'chan k'ti v'hi k'amram elav yom v'yom v'lo shama alehem. Mordechai didn't listen. U'lahalan k'ti v'lo shama aleh alishka v'tla. And Yosef as well didn't listen. And not only is their test similar, but g'dulatan shava. Why, how? Hadhu d'chtiv, again back in Yosef's story, v'yasar parvat tabatome al yado, v'yiteno ta'al yad Yosef, v'yal besh oto b'day shish. He became royalty. He got the ring, he got the lavush, V'chan k'tiv v'yasar ha-melech ha-tabato asher b'yamei haman v'yitna l'mordechai. L'halan k'tiv v'yarkev otav v'mirkevet ha-mishneh asher lo yu'beik'u l'fanav avrich. So, you know, Mordechai also got the king's ring, and additionally, they got the chariots. We have Yosef, people running in front of him when he's in the royal chariot. V'chan k'tiv v'naton ha-vush v'hasus v'karu l'fanav kacha yasel ish asher melechavet. Bikaro. They both got the chariot or horse or equivalent thing. Someone's calling in front of them. They got the lavush. They got the ring in their reward as well. Okay? So, something about B'nai Leah, B'nai Rachel, sorry, are in common that says the Midrash. And in fact, the Kabbalistic sources actually indicate that Mordechai was actually Gilgal of Yosef. There's a whole book written about it, which I didn't read. But this Kesher goes very, very deep. Is the point, very deeply, it's, whether it be historically or whether it be spiritually, mystically, there's some connection between Mordechai and Yosef, and what is it? And so we're going to like rise up a few levels, you know, history is hard to understand and mystically is hard to understand, but ourselves are a little easier to understand. So what is this midah that, and we talked about Rachel and Leah also as having certain midos, Rachel especially in her tznius, and how her descendants had those same midos, and here we see again, both of her sons, Yosef and Binyamin and his descendants, have certain traits in common. So let's try to highlight from this midrash, what traits do we see here, what is the lesson for us, and the role models we have in Yosef and in Mordechai. So you already mentioned something. You already mentioned that they were really, how do you say it? You want to say it again?
Stubborn. Consistent.
Okay, right? You could look at it in like a slightly negative toned word or a more positive toned word, but it's the same midah. No, sometimes it has a negative connotation. The truth is, because you said that word, I'll jump ahead a tiny bit, because we're going to see, of course we know already, that Haman decided, he wasn't just annoyed at Mordechai for a few things about him at the FDA, it turned into the Haam Yisrael. And there is a question, I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit because we're going to revisit it, but of why he wanted to get rid of the whole nation, why not just Haman? And one reason the Bavitcher Rebbe says is, he saw this midah in Mordechai as reflective of a midah that all the Jewish people have. We know Am Yisrael's Am Kasei Oref, right? And so there is a certain stubbornness here, a certain toughness and persistence, consistence, that we saw in Yosef continually refusing, in Mordechai continually refusing, and in all Am Yisrael. So Haman said, forget it. I know you people. You're all like this. Right? And of course, we know that this is a midah that we should do the Tov as our role models, did Yosef and Mordechai.
What was interesting is that, I mean, this particular comparison, because it says it was a mistake for him because he wanted it. Like, it like him being a person who like, values beauty, was very hard for him to deny the advances of his
Isha. Yes, okay.
So, it's very interesting that you said this because that kind of indicates that Mordechai has some kind of desire to give it to Haman maybe because. To me, I found this very confusing because Mordechai itself is kind of a court name, like it's Persian name. It's not
Mordor. Yeah. You're thinking that this comparison is not only in the stubbornness, perhaps it's also in the relationship towards the test that they were stubborn in response to.
Right. So it could very well be that Mordechai wanted to give it to Haman because that could help him advance his position in court, and. Dafka, he knew it was wrong to you, he didn't do it, and in the end, his reward is that he had
hired him. Interesting. I never thought about it that way. I haven't seen particular impression in that direction. Interesting thought. Right. I think Mordechai has proven himself pretty upright, that he probably wasn't really going down that path. Like with Yosef, there are sources that say he actually almost went down that path. Mordechai, you don't see the same thing to that extent anyway. It could be on some level.
I have seen it. I mean, it was an English book, so it's not all the sources were cited.
Sure.
But I have seen it explained that Mordechai and Esther were kind of hidden Jews in the sense that they, I mean, Esther is obvious, like nobody knew that what her nation was, but like Mordechai was, he didn't want to flaunt his Judaism too much because he wanted to be a part of court life.
Interesting. I think he was probably a little more noble than just wanting to be part of court life,
right.
but I hear your thought.
Yeah.
Interesting. Sure.
To back up for a minute before we speak about the Nito, when you were talking about the connection between are more kind than you think. I would say that at the very least, perhaps we could posit that Mordecai was inspired by those things.
Mm-hmm.
That he, you know, he wanted to give in his.
I was teaching the Bial Rebbe, saying how Yosef gave the koch to the Maccabees, actually, to, in certain midas they shared, in rising up from the lowest points to being the highest points, perhaps in his midah of persistence and stubbornness, he also, Mordechai, drew koch from that as well. Interesting. So definitely on the role model level, and apparently on a deeper level also. That's, Rav Yechezkel Levinstein talks about the steadfast nature of being firm on his principles no matter what. And I even saw that ultimately we see Mordechai wearing tcheles. Tcheles Mordechai, and tcheles is known to be the most steadfast color, long-lasting, at least in those times, that perhaps there's a symbolism there also. The Teferes Tzion is a commentary on the Midrash, which points out a different element and aspect that they both had in common, which is standing strong under pressure, which is similar, but not exactly the same thing. There could be pressure and circumstances which are not the same Nisayon over and over again. And so I think these are two, you know, imagine what they were going through, each one in his test, really it must have been a lot of pressure. And we're going to see also, we mentioned in previous Gemara, that some people criticize Mordechai for his stance, and they said, it's all because of you, that we have this Gezerah. And the pressure, if he was doing this day after day, maybe there wasn't a Gezerah yet, but people may have started mumbling and murmuring about it and not being happy with it. There was a certain pressure from others in both their circumstances to fall to the test. So both of them we can learn this from, and definitely sometimes it's not, I think just thinking about it, sometimes it's not only like a test against halacha of like doing an aveira like Mordechai or Yosef. Sometimes it could just be working on midos where like the same things irk us over and over again. Sometimes it could be kids who complain a lot of times over and over again. Sometimes it could be being in trying circumstances that don't go away for a few months when you have to go to the hospital a lot. So, like, everyone has their own thing, and sometimes they don't go away so fast. And this is its own nisayon of things. You think you passed it once, and then it comes back again to get you, you know? That's...
Like, there's no end in sight.
Right.
There's no light at the end of time.
Exactly.
It's like you're looking in the future, and you're like,
when
is
going
to end?
Right. We don't always know. Right. And God's but sometimes this is, we have to keep Yosef and Mordechai in mind to get us through those times that don't seem to end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, back to the shot from it. So we have him not bowing down, and I mentioned this idea that Na'arod was happy with him, and when it mentioned his lineage previously, originally the Gemara said it was Latov, he had a good name, both in his mother's side and his father's side, both Shvatim that he came from, but also Lara, perhaps they're both Shvatim renamed because people complained about both Shvatim that like this descendant of Yamin and this descendant of Yehuda got us all in trouble, it's all his fault. So the truth is, why did he? Right. There was Binyamin, in other words, he was from both, Binyamin and Yehuda. We spoke about previously that he made both Shvatim proud, so to speak. He reflected a good, you know, tones from both. But so the truth is, interestingly enough, according to the Pshat, why didn't he bow down? He knew that he was going to get them all in trouble. No? Or else he knew at least that he was going to get himself in trouble. Maybe he didn't know for sure that he would get everyone in trouble, but himself. Like, why was he putting himself in danger like that? Why did he start up with him? Was it really against halacha to bow down? I don't have halacha sources this year, but, you know, it's a little murky. It's not so clear. Pshat doesn't have any avodah zarah here. Pshat should bow down to Haman. You know, people show kavod to a king. People show kavod. This is how they show kavod. Are you not allowed to give a bow in front of an important person? Not so clear that that's usher. So how could he go ahead and put himself in danger and maybe everybody else in danger by not bowing? So we have the famous Midrash, which many people know as the simplest answer to it. Anyone familiar?
He had an idol around his neck.
So we're going to go back to our Midrash. We're going to go to the next, I don't even know if I gave it to you in order, sorry, because I didn't order the share. It should be next or coming soon. No, it's backwards, sorry. 7-5. We're in still Midrash Rabbah. I'm more Midrash Rabbah heavy this year than Gemara heavy. If he's in the same Parshas Zion, we have Hay over here, where we have a little bit of background to this idea of Haman coming into power and the bowing down problem. And so Rabbi Pinchas Amar, hey over there, Shnei Ashirim Amdu Balam, Echad Yeshua V'Echad Umar HaOlam. There were two rich people in the world. One belonged to the Israel, one belonged to the nations. And their wealth served them badly. It led to bad things for them. Korach, Israel, which is its own interesting idea that we're not going to talk about. Korach was the one that we're talking about among the Israel. Back to Yosef, interestingly. Apparently, according to the Midrash, he found storehouses of gold and silver that Yosef had hidden away and took it for himself out of Mitzrayim. Very interesting. And if you look at the commentary, anytime with the Gemara, the copies that I give you, and the Midrash copies, if it has translation, often the bold is the translation, and the not bold is like commentaries on the Midrash. So the commentaries say that maybe he had exchanged some of the storehouses. He was able to make a lot of money because they had all the store food, you know, during the years of famine. So everyone came to buy from him, he had a lot of money. And apparently Korach took it out of Mitzrayim. The Haman b'umar olam. Lakach otso malcha Yehuda. According to this, Haman had a hand in getting the booty from the Malcha Yehuda when Bnei Yisrael were exiled, and he became rich from it. The Chivan Shara'ah HaMelcha Rashro, and when the king saw his wealth, Vaser Banav Lefanav Sarim, and his all important 10 sons, Amad V'Gidlover Amamo, apparently this happened at this part of the story. Maybe, it would seem that he got the money before, because Gal's Bavel was a long time ago, but something happened, which the Midrash doesn't choose to specify, at this point in time, where Ahasuerus became aware of his tremendous wealth and his important family, and so he promoted him to this important position. So he said, you're so important, everyone should bow down to you. This is the Midrash that you mentioned that says that once he was in his position of people bowing down to him, he thought he would give a little, you know, and he put a tzelem on his clothes over his heart, and everyone who bowed to him was also bowing to Avodah Zarah. Okay, so maybe it was controversial, or maybe it was pretty clear that he's not allowed to bow down. Now, I think it's interesting to note also the pshat. Mordechai could have written in the pshat. And Mordechai put a tzelem on his clothes, and Mordechai wouldn't bow down, it would have made himself look a lot better, no? To all the future generations reading the Megillah. So I think that's an interesting question to ponder, why the Pshat doesn't say that. Interesting. I don't have a specific answer. What? Anyone has a thought? Feel free.
I don't have an answer, but there's always been one phrase that bothered me. Uh-huh. Madua ha'ober mitzvah ha'melech.
Yeah.
Usually they're not being over a mitzvah, right? We're just talking about, like, violating the law of God. That's how they're, like, but it's, like, the reverse. I don't know, but it's always, like, I always felt like that was really good. It was never teased out, you know?
Interesting. Like, are you wondering if the Melech thing is at play here? Like, is there a criticism, a subtle criticism of Mordechai you're wondering? That
maybe.
It wasn't right, maybe? Is that what you're getting at?
Like, maybe somehow, meaning like that there's Madras Halver Mitzvah Hamelach, but somehow he's been violating the law of God, you know, the rules of
okay.
God previously.
Interesting.
And somehow he's being crucified. I don't know. I don't have an answer.
Okay. Interesting. So it's interesting because the Megillat Sarim addresses your point, but doesn't point to those words. But it fits in very nicely with those words, so we'll just take it all together. Okay, Megillat Sarim says that it actually wasn't, in a sense, it wasn't right because he didn't have to bow down according to this approach necessarily. Maybe he was putting everyone in danger, and anyway, even if the Midrash is literal and correct, and it was Avodah Zarah, he wasn't allowed to bow down. Miguel Sturm says, he could have gone somewhere else. What do you have to always be in Haman's path for? When Haman's walking through, he could have gone, like, eating his lunch or something. You know, like, why do you have to get everyone in trouble for? That was that part. Even if maybe he really wasn't allowed to bow, but he didn't have to, like, make a show of it. Okay, so the answer to Miguel Sturm, I find a little controversial, but it's interesting. He based it off of Ramban on Yod, like Hashkafic, philosophical Ramban, which I was debating if I should say the controversial sounding part of it. I'll say it, and we'll take out of it what we want for our purposes, okay? And I didn't read this whole Ramban, honestly. What? You like, I've read it? No, I'll be honest. I didn't go you know, I cross-reference a lot when I research, when I prepare to share. I did not have the time or patience or necessarily just to go through the whole Ramban. But what Miguel Stern quotes the Ramban is saying is that when a tzaddik does something that's clearly, again, I don't even want to say this in the recording, but disclaimer, okay, I'm just quoting, when a tzaddik does something that's clearly against the Torah, he doesn't have zechira. It just arose in his mind, and there was, like, above the... Yeah.
Well, people say the same thing about Yehuda.
In what sense?
That
with Tamar?
Yeah.
That he didn't have zechira?
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. You know, I'm thinking more contemporary. That's a very dangerous thing to say. We're not going to apply that one, contemporary, but his understanding is that Mordechai, at least we're going to now confine ourselves to Tanakh, Mordechai was a great tzaddik. This was something he could have avoided. According to this, it wasn't like he was choosing it. He was perhaps compelled in some way. His bechir was like, what's the word?
Suspended,
thank you. You know, I'm thinking like paro, lahavdil. Suspended in some way. What's the point of that? I don't think Miguel Starm is trying to justify Mordechai per se, because no one's really occupying themselves with criticizing Mordechai except for the people of his time. Like, this is not a topic of, like, Mordechai should have been punished, because, no, because what did it lead to, really? The opposite. It didn't lead to horrible things, so Mordechai should be punished. Well, it could have.
Well, maybe that is the point, that his Bethira was suspended in order that the story would happen the way it did.
Exactly.
Like, say that about, you know, your 15 souls, or...
Though Yosef was much more innocent seeming in his actions. But exactly, you know, that is, I think that's really the point, is that it's controversial in terms of what it says about Mordechai or any other tzaddik, which is why we're not going there. But his point is, there's the whole story, we're looking for Asher Panim and Ashtaka Pratis, and we know already from the Gemara that the Gezerah itself wasn't an accident. The Bnei Yisrael on some level deserved the Gezerah, from whether it be from bowing down to the Avodah Zarah in Nebuchadnezzar's time or attending the party, and that the Gezerah had to happen. And Mordechai was the conduit through which it happened. So maybe he could have avoided not bowing down to Haman, and he didn't. He made a show of not bowing down to Haman. But in some way, according to the Sarim, his Bechir was put on pause for the sake of the story unfolding the way it had to unfold, and then, of course, the issue of having from...
He seems to have been very much alone in this.
In not bowing down.
In not bowing down, exactly. Uh-huh. And he definitely made a very public show of it.
Mm-hmm.
So
it serves a role. It serves a function.
Yeah, like my husband worked for many, many years. He studied in a Catholic university and a Jesuit university. He did his internship and his residency, everything there. And he... You know, the comer would come with the holy water and all these things, and my husband would constantly be ducking, you know, into this room or that room or behind the...
That's what you would expect Mordechai to do, yes.
Oh, he would be sprinkled liberally.
Wow, interesting. I could see how you would think of that. Interesting. So, it's interesting because the Maharal actually quotes Gemara in Brachos, Dav Zion, which says that it's permissible to provoke a Rasha. Also, like, disclaimer, like, I don't try this at home, kids. I'm just quoting sources here. Okay? But I also was like, Maharal, what are you saying?
It must be performed by professionals.
No, I like that. Okay? So, the Maharal kind of tempers it a little bit, that Gemara, and says, what it means is, a tzaddik doesn't have to be afraid if his actions are provoking a rasha.
Yeah,
because he's doing the right thing.
Yeah, but a tzaddik isn't necessarily considering himself a tzaddik, so it's not necessarily
right.
A practical guy.
Well, I don't even know that. I think the point is that if you're standing up for the right thing, and in doing so you're provoking Russia, you don't have to be afraid because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Like Pinchas.
Like Pinchas. It wouldn't. If I had been living then, it wouldn't have been obvious to me that it was the right thing. But now we know that.
Well, I mean, the thing is, at the time, everybody else was like, "We don't know what to do." You know,
he did it with confidence.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So we have to be confident and persistent and consistent in defending Torah and standing up for Torah.
Mordechai seems to have done this with confidence.
Yes, exactly.
Bizarre.
Exactly. And it's interesting because he also, the Maharal points back to the wording, we always get back to our text, where the pasuk says in pasuk bet lo yichra velo yishtachaveh. He wouldn't bow down. He wouldn't kneel down and bow down in kind of atid, in future tense. Why doesn't it say he didn't? Right? But the point was, he was making a statement that he would never. Right? It was a statement. And Maral says, this was the Kiddush Hashem he was doing. You know, whether, you know, we were a little bit uncomfortable perhaps to the extent that it might have caused some problems, or the interpretations of it, what's with his Bechira. But the point is, he was essentially making Kiddush Hashem. Because like you said, no, we don't hear of anyone else doing this. And the statement, you know, if indeed there was a Tselem on Haman, that had to be stood up against. He had to protest that.
Maybe the Tselem could be symbolic of how evil the person he was. I mean, Mordechai may have done this. Like we said, he's a Rasha, but maybe, you know, Haman had a special place. He was an Agadi. He had all this stuff that he took from Yosef. He, you know, maybe the list was long and Mordechai felt like, gotcha, this guy.
Interesting.
It could have been if it was someone else, he might have avoided it. Or
the elements of Kiddush Hashem, like the idea of during the time of Shemad, that there's a chiyuv to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim in a way that's not the case. If it's not a time of Shemad, if the enemy is not making an example of, you know, it's just by default for whatever other reasons, then it's different. It's not the same extent that a person required to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. So Daka Maral is talking about Kiddush Hashem, maybe that's the idea that we're talking about here.
Maybe what if I also understood that he had it out from the Jewish people. Maybe that was clear to Mordechai that we don't know that.
So let's talk about that for a minute.
See evidence of it.
So let's talk about that, okay? I didn't bring this inside, but there's also a midrash that maybe some of you are familiar with of why Mordechai got quite so mad at Mordechai. Haman got quite so mad at Mordechai. Some are familiar. What midrash do you think I'm talking about?
With the shoe.
With the shoe. Who wants to tell the story?
And Haman was dying of thirst or hunger or something like that.
Do you know why?
Because he was
running away. So the midrash that I'll insert.
He mismanaged his...
It's a lesson not to be missed. In their, apparently, for Achashverosh, they were in the same battle and two different set of troops. And Mordechai, they both had a set of supplies and rations for their troops, for their respective troops. And Haman squandered them and mismanaged them and didn't use them well, and he ran out. Mordechai, however, was wise and careful and did not. And that's its own lesson, standalone. Besides the whole Mordechai story, I think that's a huge lesson, actually. Sometimes those are the kinds of things that aren't viewed as religious values. They're just like general world, secular, common sense things that are good and nice. But the fact that it's in the Midrash tells us that there's a religious value associated with it also. Hashem gives us our physical things in this world that we have, and we're supposed to value them and treat them carefully and use them well. And it's not always an easy thing to do. Sometimes we get an influx of a lot all at once, and it takes time and process and thoughtfulness to arrange it and to save it and to organize it. It actually makes me think of Yosef again. I didn't even think of that until just now. We were comparing Mordechai Yosef before. Dafka, this was Yosef's strength. And Dafka, this was Mordechai's strength. There's our same Midah from Rachel. I don't know if you can find it in Rachel. It would be an interesting thing. I don't know if we find the Rachel, but maybe they were guilty of each other. We said there's some connection between them and their midos, and they were adopted strong in this area. It's a religious value to take the matanos that Hashem gives it, the shefa, and to treat it as such, and to use it as best as possible. So Muhammad didn't do this, and so what did he do? That, so therefore his troops were hungry.
And Mordechai refuses until eventually Haman agrees to do Mordechai's plea. And they didn't have their papers, so they wrote the agreement on the bottom of Mordechai's shoe.
The bottom of, I think, Mordechai's shoe. Yeah, because Mordechai used to hold up the shoe.
Just throw it out. So Mordechai wrote on the bottom of his shoe, and then like every time Mordechai and Haman would pass each other, Mordechai would be like,
okay, which means, why did Haman get so mad at Mordechai in this instance?
Because Haman really, which is, by the way, another interesting parallel, because that's been addressed that Yosef had owned the entire Mitzrayim, because they all,
he was in charge.
After they ran out of money, they sold themselves to the king.
The concept of lordship or mastership of both of them. Interesting. They were leaders in the full sense of the word, not just for their own people, but in a more general sense, they were able to have, they had...
Well, not just that they were leaders, but that they had a financial right over their enemies.
Interesting. Interesting point. Okay, so with, according to this Mahalakha, this Midrash, it was a personal thing. Haman had a personal vendetta against Mordechai, and it made him really, really mad. And the way Rabbi David Foreman explains it, this built up into something against the whole Jewish people just because it didn't make him look good. If he would just like wipe out one guy that he was annoyed at, it was like a petty thing to do to, for everyone to see that he was taking revenge on one guy he didn't like to kill him. So he made it like, he blew it up into this much bigger thing. And that became the thing. That became the Gezerah. Yeah. I love it when people ask me.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, before the Shah of Iran was deposed, there were lots of Israelis there working in Iran, and one of the primary things that they were doing Persia is suffering from the most horrific lack of water and drought because of utter mismanagement of their resources.
Hmm.
This is like front page New York Times news, okay?
Interesting.
And yes, and they're having unbelievable crises and riots about it, and they've completely mismanaged it, and that combined with not a lot of rain. They're talking about enormous swaths of the country, like 70% of the country being desert and inhabitable in a certain number of years.
Wow.
Because of the heat and the utter lack of mismanagement of water resources.
Interesting. Wow. Okay, thank you for that. Very interesting connection.
I find it so interesting because we get a lot of personal vendettas going on here.
Mm-hmm. We meant that, yeah. Uh-huh. Court intrigue.
Yeah. I mean,
we've spoken a lot about it.
It's kind of the same thing, but I think we realize like the point where we highlight it.
Interesting. Okay, so we have one approach to what the problem was. We mentioned another approach of the Bava Terebi, which is that he saw in Mordechai a trait that all of Bnei Israel has, and that was troubling to him, that Amkshe Oref, stubbornness, he realized was reflective of the whole Am, and that's what led him to ultimately want to destroy all of Bnei Israel. And we're going to, as we continue the next couple of sources, we're going to see a little more of possibilities of that picture of what really was getting at him, why he wanted to destroy Bnei Israel. The Pasuk, back to our shot here, the Pasuk said, Pasuk Dad, V'amram Elav Yom V'yom V'lo Shema Aleim V'yagidu L'Haman L'Oriam D'Divrei Mordechai. They told Haman to see if the words of Mordechai would stand. What words of Mordechai? So I would think, ki higi lahem asher Yehudi. He told him he was Jewish. But we don't actually see Mordechai speaking. So what words indeed? The Midrash says there were some specific words. And if you look, we're still in Zion in the Midrash Rabbah, the next part, Chet.
Well, I mean, there's a question there. This post and, you know, they say, Madhu Atelberet.
Right, but it doesn't say what he says.
I mean, this is
right, it seems like it was a response to that question. Okay.
He wouldn't want that written.
Okay, so maybe he left it out because it wouldn't... Maybe it wouldn't sound good. So let's see what it could have been. The Midrash tries to fill in the blank. So we have the Midrash Rabbah, Zayin Chet. It says, Ma amar lehem Mordechai, lemisho mer lo ma du'at ha'averat mitzvah amelah. What exactly did he say? So first we have possibility number one. Rabbi Levi, Amar lehem Mordechai, Moshe Rabbeinu Nizir lenu batorah, Aru ha'isha asher yasa pesul masecha, Rosh hazeh otah atma avodazara, V'yishayo anavi hiziranu, Chidlu lachem min ha'adam asher neshama bapo, ki v'men achshavu. The Torah says, not allowed to. That was the answer. Consistent with our view of Mordechai as steadfast in his Judaism and adhering to the Torah, regardless of the threat or the impression it makes on people, they said, why are you breaking the king's rule? He said, because my Torah said so. Period. Another possibility, straightforward, straight away. But there's more, says the Midrash. V'lo od, ela sh'ani isgan terin shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shekol hashvatim noldu b'chutz la'aretz, u'zikeini nolad b'eretz Yisrael. I am Hashem's nobleman. I am Hashem's royal knight. He says, not royal court person of, you know, associating myself with Ahasuerus, but I am the nobleman of Hashem, and I have a specific position, he says. Out of all the Shvatim, they were all born in Chutz La'aretz, by Lavan. However, my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Binyamin, was born in Eretz Yisrael. So I have something special about me, something more chashuv. I have to rise to more important, you know, to greater expectations, greater levels. I'm judged to a higher standard. This is who I am. It's not only the Torah. Yes, all the Jews have got the Torah, but they're bowing down. But I have a special role. And more, so it continues the Midrash, Amarun Le, V'neimar Le, Miyad V'agidu L'Haman. So it says, you know, they told Haman what he said. The Gomer, Amar Lon Haman. What did Haman say back? Amarun Le, Zekeino, Halo Yishtachava L'Zekeini. Hold on a minute. Didn't your great-great-great-grandfather bow down to my great-great-grandfather? Who did Haman come from?
Esav.
Okay? Didn't Binyamin bow down to Esav? Hakhu dechtiv. And we, apparently, Achashverosh and Haman and all the great people in Paras were very well versed in the Torah. Apparently. Vatigashna ashvachot, v'gomer, v'achar nigash Yosef v'racha v'yishtachavu. So apparently, Haman was under the impression that when the pasuk says, he misunderstood, he didn't have the proper portion, he didn't read the pasuk properly. He thought it says, Rachel and her son Yosef bow down. So obviously Binyamin was Rachel's kid too. They all went to bow down. No. Hey, Tiv, Adain, Lona, what Binyamin? Amar and Lei, Hadav, Dichtiv, Agidu, Haman. It says, they told back to Haman, what was this back and forth conversation? Haman said, it goes way back, you already bowed down to me. And Mordechai said, no, I didn't. I didn't. And to me, this also expands the picture of what the conflict is. Why was Mordechai so stubborn? Why was Haman against him? It brings kind of a new dimension to it. Maybe it was personal, or maybe it was bigger than that. And here, we see the historical piece. We see the, like, through the generations and history of Tanakh and of Am Yisrael, that there is a continuity to it. But before we get into that very much, the more basic message that I'm getting from this midrash is family values and ancestry. He stood for something. He knew where he came from. He came from people who don't bow down. And we saw already in his midos, you know, that his midos were similar and to Yosef, but also his values were similar. And a lot of times, I feel like our generation is not so in touch with that. Because we're very into, you know, self-made man and moving forward in history and futuristic new age everything. And we progress, but in doing so, we sometimes fail to pull along with us the values and the strengths and the midos of all the people who came before us. And it's not generic. This is Mordechai's lineage. We all, again, we said it named him by his lineage when it introduced him in the first place. It's not a coincidence because he fully embodied what his lineage and their legacy was all about. And that's something that when we can pause, it made me stop and think about it. I was like, oh, what values did my ancestors stand for? Like, yes, we all stand for Torah and we want to continue that legacy for Am Yisrael. But no, specifically, I actually come from a grandfather who was a teacher of Torah. Look at that. And Baruch Hashem, I'm proud to say that I can continue that legacy, and a father and a lot of other relatives actually. But like, what are the meanings in our families? What do we stand for? And that's part of what we're supposed to be doing in this world, not just something generic, but something specific.
Well, I think it's a lot harder in this generation because we have a lot of people who come, who are Balichu, who don't come from Torah homes, and they
True.
Kind of take on the collective minagim of Amisad.
Interesting and point.
Harder to miss. I mean, maybe some of them have grandparents or great grandparents that they knew, probably also great grandparents. But it's harder to really. Like, I know that like my grandparents were religious and my great grandparents. You have to go like.
Interesting.
You know, I was saying my fear that we had someone in Al Kahila one time ago who was a Garrett. We have quite a few of them, Doctor. And she was about to get married, and she was really, really torn because she felt that she wasn't worthy. And I said to her, what's going on here? And she was a very well-versed woman, really, you know, stood what she believed in, and she was a very strong woman in her own right. She said, well, you know, my son, he comes from this, and where do I come from? And I said, well, if you really think about it, you are now a Jew. Where do you come from? come from? Where did we all come from?
Christina.
Abraham. Who is Abraham's father? Where did he come from? Like, so if you don't have your own, you take away...
Keep going back a little further.
Right, yeah, you
have
your own.
Right, we have this whole book to tell us where our fathers believed
right.
in.
And I would add to that, not only the Baal Teshuva, but unfortunately also the Holocaust.
Right.
People don't know what their lineage was. We don't know a lot about people from previous generations. In some families, like I once found, when I was in Ilpan, there's a Sephardi woman in my Ilpan who was not a Baal Teshuva, who did not have the Holocaust story, who had a book, a full book that her extended family put out about some ancestor, like a long time ago. And it was like a book about one person from... Oh, really? I don't remember how many generations before. And I was like, wow, they have that. That's such a treasure to like know so much about so long ago. And if we don't know so much, again, whatever we can pull at, or even maybe if they weren't religious, I would extend this to Midos also. If you know the character traits about people, about ancestors, it doesn't have to be they kept this halacha, but they stood for something. What were their values? What were their good points, you know? And that's what we are continuing. Okay, so we have personal, we have history, we have Tanakh, we have family. There's different levels of this conflict and what's going on. The Ari says the Tanakh family thing in his classic mystical way, and he says that going back to that part of history, the Tanakh, that story with Binyamin and Esav and everything, he said Binyamin didn't bow, but Yaakov did. And according to the Ari, that was an imperfection and a mistake on some level of Yaakov. Some level, it doesn't mean every level. But he says there was a certain pigam, a damage, a problem that was created as a result of Yaakov submitting himself in that way to Esav, and there needed to be a tikkun for that. And Mordechai was the tikkun for that, on the mystical level as well. By fixing that, by not bowing down, the same action is the point.
One question I have is, Mordechai wasn't the first person to do this.
To not bow down. In not in the board in Buchanetz's time,
right?
On Anim Shalaza?
Yeah. Nobody criticized them. Nobody. I mean, I guess because they were saved by a miracle, everyone was like, oh, okay, this is fun.
Interesting. We see the story here and not there. That's an interesting thing to compare the stories. I don't think so. I'm not sure what the lineage was, but they're not like named by lineage the way Mordechai is. So there is something special here because it's not only a statement against the Avodah Zarah, it's also a representation of family values and Binyamin and you know Mitzhakim Yaakov and all the things.
More of what I'm saying is, why are people getting so worked out? Like, why are they creating more times? There's a precedent for this.
Well, there was a gezeira against the Ha'am that he caused.
Nobody criticized.
Right, Hanan Mishael
Azaria.
Right, Daniel. I'll be honest with you, I haven't learned Daniel in that depth to know if there are any Mepharshim to talk about that there. I know the story, I learned the Pshat, but I don't, it could be there Mepharshim to say there. I actually am not familiar. That'd be another interesting homework to look into. Okay, so we have our different layers here. Okay, so we did the first few Pshukim. Let's do a few more Pshukim in the Mishnah. Vaya Haman ki ein Mordechai kori Mishnah chavelo, ve'emolei Haman chema. He got all mad. Vayizez be'inav l'shloach yad b'mordechai levado. Did other, before they were thrown into the fire, maybe there wasn't that much time in between. I don't think, it wasn't like a day after day thing. Here, it was a day after day thing where the Jews were like, why is he irking him? Why is he provoking him? If once, at the grand, you know, they didn't bow down and then they were punished for it, I don't think there was the time and the opportunity as much for people to get worried and worked up and mad in the same kind of way.
Right. I mean,
could be for a short time, people thought it was, you know, not good.
Right. But, well, I mean, they were safe or active.
Showed everybody.
right.
Okay, Vaivez, I'll just comment, there's one line in the Midrash also, which says this Lashon Vaivez is used somewhere else in Tanakh, once again. Word association. Who knows Tanakh by heart? Like the Midrash. Pasuk Vav. Vaivez Beinav Lishloach Yad B'Mordechai Levado. Describing Haman. He was despicable in his eyes to just stretch out his hand against Mordechai. Good, yeah, but no. We have it by Esav. Another, we've been talking about Esav. What he vaivez? The Bechora. And the Midrash says he was a despiser, the son of a despiser. He also had the traits of his great-great-great-grandfather, but it wasn't
the
good trait.
The shoe is the same story. Like, he gets, you know, he makes him himself a slave because he wants food.
But it was opposite. Oh, that's interesting. The food,
the
slave.
He sells himself.
Interesting. Haman, he had the same pitfalls. Wow. Wow, I like it.
Yeah, well, yeah, so he was also, he ran himself to death.
Interesting. Okay. A lot of interesting connections. Okay. So it wasn't enough to just go against Mordechai, whether it be because it's too petty for him, or whether it be because he saw something larger in Am Yisrael that bothered him. He gizu lo et Am Mordechai. He knew, they told him what nation Mordechai was from. He's like, Keshaman lashmid et kol yudim, asher b'chol malchut achashverosh im Mordechai. How did it happen? Okay. B'chodesh harishon, hu chodesh nisan, Vishnat Shem Israel Achashverosh, note, we're in the 12th year now of the story of Achashverosh's reign. We said how this story is like stretched out. We read it because we want to see the Hashgacha, and I want to leave the next, so it's easier to see when you smush it all together. This is a long time after the other part of the story that we've read. Okay, so it was Nisan, it was the 12th year of Achashverosh's rule. He peeled poor. Hu agora, lefnei haman, miyom, miyom, umichodesh lechodesh, shneimasar, umichodesh adar. How did he decide to give it to Am Yisrael? He made the famous pour. He made a lottery. He did it based on the day, based on the month. The 12th month came out, the month of Adar.
There's a precedent.
All right. All the politics.
But it's interesting that Haman believes in this kind of hocus-pocus, pour, and like he's willing to wait almost a whole year.
Because the poor said so.
That's the date that came out.
Why didn't he just say, tomorrow, next week, next month, give it a few weeks to prepare. Okay, next month, we're doing this. He made it poor. So it's so interesting because I think that the Pshat and the Drash here, which is the level that we've been speaking on a lot, are vastly different here. It doesn't say what you're saying. Nowhere in the Pshat does it say he did sorcery. It just says he made a lottery. Lottery, to me, means random.
He has to believe in that. He has
one. Why did he bother with randomness then? Not why do you believe in the...
Yeah.
But why do you believe randomness? Right. Okay? So I think that the means of the pshat, on a pshat level, randomness versus the midrash, which I did send to you. Let's see where
he is. He's from Amalek.
He's also from Amalek, which we know has a tradition of magical mumbo-jumbo type of stuff. Okay? So we'll find the midrash, which says... essentially, you're both familiar with and saying. Here we go. We're all from Midrash Rabbah. Oh, I copied it for you in the other copy of Midrash. My other copy of Midrash, it just has more text on a page. So sometimes there's more you can, let's find it. Okay, so first, just one shot. The simple level is randomness. And I think that has a lot to tell us, too. Because if we're looking at the story of Megillas Esther as Esther Panim, as Hashgacha Pratis, what's the opposite of Hashgacha Pratis? It's not sorcery, it's randomness. Right? And I think that lesson and message is hidden and hinted to in the pshat level of understanding it by itself. And then we could understand, you're right, why would he rely on that? Was he making a point on the pshat level of like, I'll just throw you to the, you know, your fate will be up to luck. That's essentially what he was saying.
Your son's not saying.
Exactly. That's the message I'm getting from a pshat understanding of it. And then, of course, if you understand that there was more to it, then there, you know, it's more of a the kavana lara. Okay, let me just find the midrash. Hold on.
I mean, according to midrash, the Amalekim were also into that kind of divination.
Right, that's what we were saying a minute ago.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, when they went up against Yeshua, they specifically
about
the people who had some
final
resolve for that day. So
it was again, after the day. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's Zion Yud Aleph, the Midrash, where it says, V'chodesh HaRishon V'chodesh Nisan. And the Midrash says, quotes Pasuk, T'nei k'she'amar haman harasha la'abedi Yisrael amar, Hayach ani sholeit bahen. How can I rule over them? He didn't just want to get rid of them. He wanted to rule over them. He wanted more. And maybe it was related to the personal issue with Mordechai because he felt like Mordechai ruled over him and he wants to rule over Mordechai and his whole people. Definitely could be related to that. But in doing this, what did he do? It says, I'm going to cast lots. And the commentary on the Midrash that I copied for you, if I could find which page I copied it, since you found my book over here, the commentary on the Midrash says, I underlined it underneath, it says that he was doing magical things over there. Hold on 1 second, and I'll read it to you. Here we go. It's a little bit more close up, that page. Underneath it, the commentary of H.O.C. says, "Mitnei shehaya holich likrat nachashim." He went to sorcerers, and that's why he was saying, how is he going to rule over them? With sorcerers, he was going to go to the mazal, inim sa makom mitzad hamazal, lima palatam. Can he find from the mazal, from the zodiacs, from the magical things, how can he bring about their downfall? Maybe there's going to be, you know, it wasn't just a blind lot. He actually went to people who had some sort of magic involving this kind of lot, and he was intending on finding their weak spot. And it really reminds me of Bilam. We mentioned Amalek, but also we know with Bilam there is this issue with you know, magic and sorcery also, and he was also trying to find the time, Chazal say, when is the right moment that he's able to curse Bnei Israel when they have like a weakness. So here, Haman is trying to find the right time, not of the day, but of the calendar to influence their downfall.
What does Tavachat mean for a
person? Tavachat is like a yell of a protest. So let's keep going. Okay, so after he did this, and according to this, not just by chance, but on purpose, by magic, Ruach HaKodesh Tavachat. And Hashem answers in like a loud cry, V'ala mi adu goral, it says in the Navi, in Yoel. My nation is going to have a goral, a lot. How do they translate it here? They cast lots against my people? Like, come on. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rasha ben Rasha. Goralcha ola lihit salim. Now let's talk about your goral for a minute. You're going to throw gorals around for my people? I'll tell you what your goral is going to be. You're going to be hanged, okay? He peel poor who ha goral. Alav nafal. Hagoral, he peel is lasho nafal. The lot fell on him. Vinahapoch. You want to cast lots? I'll cast them on you. This is Hashem responding back to Haman Ki'ilu. Again, Vinahapoch, Hashem is defending us. Even if we deserved the gezeirah on some level, don't worry, Hashem is there standing up for us. Okay? So this is one understanding of the poor.
And of course, Haman is in the place where he had planned to hang it.
Exactly. Right. Dafka, the people, the poor, it's everything is upside down.
I think the fact that it was a year in waiting was like punishment enough, almost. Like hanging over your head.
For Bnei Israel.
All the, anticipation of it. Like that.
There was definitely a suffering in that time, for sure.
Ruling over us. Even without killing us, it's almost worse than killing us.
It depends on what you count as. If they were happy before then, it's true the threat wasn't felt the entire year because they started rejoicing before the day actually arrived, but it wasn't set in stone until the day arrived. So however much, it doesn't really matter, but however much time, it was still a large period of time. I want to show you another Midrash, which I love, which is also Midrash Rabbah, and here we have, I was like, I don't know if I want to send it or not. I copied the Hebrew of it, not English, because it's just too long to go through, but it's just too colorful to ignore. So it's in one of the pages that has like the longer Hebrew text, and let's find it. It says, first it says he put a goral on the day and also on the month. So why does it say the day and the month? I think it is. Hello. Yes, it does. Let me make sure. Okay. Okay, yes. So the page before was just saying that he started. Hold on. That is Zion Gimel. Let's go back for a minute. Okay, just before. Okay. Just before I was saying that he put the, here it sounds like it's not really random, maybe this is more tied into the sorcery piece, that he was putting the Gora on the day. And up in Shemayim, while down on earth, he was busy concocting his plan about what day would be. Up in Shemayim, the Saro Shel XYZ Yom and XYZ Chodesh was busy arguing B'nai Yisrael's case up in Shemayim. I just, like, we're not going to, like, expound this and apply it the way we often do with it. I just think it's so cool, beautiful and cute and, like, colorful. Right? What did the Saro say of Yom Rishon, listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He said, Ribono Shalom, Kinev Ru Shemayim V'aretz V'yamarta, Im Lo V'riti Oman V'loyla Chukot Shemayim V'aretz Lo Tamti. The sky and the earth were created on me. And we know from Yirmiyahu that the heavens and earth were created for the sake of the Torah. And then it goes through like all these psukim supporting this thought that the whole world is created for the sake of the Torah, Shemayim V'aretz. So says Yom Rishon, and then in the middle I bracket it again, V'rasha Zem V'akesh L'Abdan, but the Rasha wants to get rid of it. Akor Shemayim V'aretz Tchila V'yachagach Adam Mechaleotan. You want to rid B'nai Yisrael that all the things created on me were created for the sake of them? Okay, first destroy me, and then you can go along and destroy them. Okay? Don't mess with Yom Rishon. Okay, and then it goes on. It goes through every single day of the week. We'll do a little bit more. It says, B'yom Shini, right? B'yamad Saro Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sorry, he peeled poor B'yom Shini. Then he tried out Monday. Amad Saro Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'yamar. Monday, it wasn't Monday, it's terrible to call Monday with a secular name in this context. Yom Shini went up in Shemayim and said to Hashem, Ribono Shalom, B'yom Shini, V'dalta Bein Mayim Elyonim U'mayim HaTachtonim, V'chein Yisrael Muvdalim, Heim Nin Ha'umot. There was a separation made on me. You know, there was a nation that was separated too. You're going to get rid of the separated nation on the separated day? That's not okay. Right? He wouldn't let. And none of the days would let. On Yom Shlishi, the plants were created. And says, Yisrael, Mafishin Mehem Shrim and Matro. Hold on a second. You can't do it on Tuesday. B'nai Yisrael have the chutz on Yom Shlishi too, because we do mitzvot with the things created Yom Shlishi. And it goes on. And every day defended B'nai Yisrael up in Shemayim that it wouldn't land in the day. So what's Muhammad to do? What's that? Right. So he couldn't be destroyed. Look at that. Haman thought he could find a day that wouldn't have a zechus. He was wrong. Okay, but what happened when all the days defended B'nai Yisrael Shemayim? So then he goes on and he goes to the months. He said, okay, I won't base it on the day, okay? So they have a marriage and everything. Let's look at the months. And he goes through month by month and says, okay, what's that? Shabbos. We keep Shabbos.
Okay.
Right? Don't worry. I copied it. You can look through that. That's why it's a midrash. In other words, I like it because it's colorful. Lamaisa, like, what does that mean? I'm not 100% sure. But the point is, the zechuyos were coming out. Okay? They were free-flowing. All the zechuyos, right? When the wave, the scales was happening, Shemayim, the Gezerah, and this, the scales were tipping. Right? This Gezerah is not really going to happen. Okay, we have the month. Hold on. Copy for the month. I copy the mezuzahs. After the month, we have the mezuzahs. Hold on. Okay, the months are the same. If someone finds it in what I copied for you, I don't even think unless I copied looking for you. Let's see what else we got here. The Chodesh Rishon. We have Goros. He feel poor. We're still in Zion. Get all us. Okay? Yom Rishon, Yom Shini. Yom Shabbat. Okay, in the middle. Do a little bit.
9:20.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so Kevan Shara'o to Rosh Hashanah Goral Nofel Bubayam Chazar. L'chodashim, he went to the month. He killed the Chodesh Nisan. V'Allah was a Chutz Pesach. Well, that was easy. That didn't work out very well. We have the Chutz of Karm Pesach. But here is the Chutz Pesach Chatan. Even the Chutz of Pesach Sheni is enough to count to the Gezerah. Interesting. Obviously, it wasn't that simplistic, but the Zechuyos are rising up, right? We never know what things that we do well are going to stand in our favor. Okay? And I love this. What about Tamas and Av?
Av?
What about Av? Why didn't he make the phone Av? That'd be the most obvious thing to do.
Longing there.
So there's what?
Longing.
Interesting. Interesting. If there's longing, maybe. Interesting. Talmud happens to be says Chutz Aretz. A lot of the battles going to Eretz Yisrael with Yeshua were fought and won, and they had Emunah Hashem. In Talmud and Av, it says Ve'od Lama Lo Ala Goral the Talmud Ve'av She'amru Lufnei Kadosh Baruch Hu Ribono Shalom Zayinu Poranu She'eru Banu Levanacha. Enough already. We have enough for us. Enough. Don't make something else bad happen in us. Like, which means what? It's cute and it's colorful and I love it. But I think it also means Hashem's not battering us into the ground. Whatever bad things happen, Hashem feels is not overdone. It's what we can handle, even if it's unfortunate, it's negative, whatever reasons Hashem has for things. But like, enough is enough. Too much Hashem is not going to do. Maybe we felt that there were times in history there was too much. But from Hashem's greater understanding, the fact that of is not when the gezeirah was made, that to me is a mashal for the concept that Hashem won't batter us into the ground. He won't do so much that we can't bear it. Hamishal will always come through. And that's the point. And then he goes to Mezalos. You could see also there's associations of Mezalos, there's Hashkliyos and everything. Beautiful. That nothing could get us down. There's always a Chliyos to be found in every topic and every day and everything. Okay? So that is our mazal, our poor. Let's finish up with the Gemara. Okay? So Azar is in the end. Anyone know? It's one of the more, a little bit more well known. Right, so he thought, he knew so much apparently about Am Yisrael, that Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar. He thought, oh, Moshe was the greatest leader, he died, that must be a bad sign. Says the Gemara, he didn't know that he also was born in Adar, and it wasn't really.
He really doesn't have to
read this. He's like a modern scholar. Okay, yes. Okay, so let's finish up with the page of Gemara that I sent you. Yesh no Am Echad. Okay? We don't have time to get into the whole discussion with Achashverosh now. We're just trying to convince him. But the beginning of the conversation with Achashverosh, he does his four. He comes at an Adar, Pasuk, Chet, Vayomer Haman Lamel Achashverosh. Yeshno Am Echad, a famous Pasuk, Mefuzar Meforad Bein Amim, Bechol Medinot, Ma'achot Techa, V'datayim Shano, Mikol Am, V'datayim Amelach, Ein Amosim, V'amelach, Ein Shavel L'Hanicham. There's a certain nation that's scattered and dispersed among the nations in all the states of your kingdom, and they have different laws, and you know, from the laws that the king does, and they don't do what the king wants, and it's worth it for you, just don't leave them be, you should get rid of them. And says the Gemara, Yeshno Am Echad, Amarava Leka Diada Lishna Bisha Kehaman. There was no one who knew how to slander as well as Haman. Amar Leita Nechlinu. Says Haman to Achashverosh, come and let us destroy the Jews. Amar Le Achashverosh says, Mistafina ni elokav de lo yavid the not very good pronounce that you'll forgive me, kid avar de kamai. I'm afraid of their God. That he isn't shouldn't do to me what he did to my predecessors. Which is very interesting to see how Achashverosh's personality plays out in this conversation. And the Midrash has a similar conversation, maybe we'll do it next time. That he's like, hold on a second, I'm not messing with their God. And that was obviously very different than his party where he wore the kahuna, which maybe is more in line with Kli Yekar, which said he was doing it maybe because he was trying to absolve himself of sins and thought they would work. It doesn't sit as well with I give them. But even so, maybe he was gloating over the fall of Beit HaMikdash, but he didn't want to do, like he didn't destroy the Beit HaMikdash. Right, Nebuchadnezzar did it already, so he can inherit that. But he's not going to like start himself with the God of the Jews, right? Amar le Yashnu min hamitzvot, not Yesh al tikra Yashno. Yeshno, there is a nation, but Yashnu, they slept, they fell asleep from the mitzvot. Says Haman said, don't worry, you can mess with them because they sinned. Their God doesn't like them anymore. That's why you can do this. Amar lay, it's blue rabbanon. Achashverosh said, hold on, yeah, I know, but like, what about their rabbis? They have righteous people and leaders and stuff. Amar lay, am echad hein. Haman said, they're all the same. Whoa. The leaders are no good either. Shema tamar karcha anios. And then he went through this whole, each phrase in the pasuk is related in the Gemara. Shema tamar karcha anios et machutcha. Haman said, you know, maybe you're going to think I'm going to make a bald spot in your kingdom. I'm going to depopulate part of your kingdom. Because I'm gonna wanna destroy this whole nation that lives there. Mufuzar and hey mom, don't worry, they're scattered around, your whole nation will still be populated, your kingdom. Shema Tumar Itana Minayhu. Maybe you're gonna say that you could have some benefit from them, maybe they're gonna contribute something to society. And there's, you know, there's some benefit that could be gotten from them. So don't destroy them. Mifurad. What's Mifurad? Kifreda Zu She'ena Osef Peiro. Mifurad is a lesson of mule. A mule is sterile and doesn't bear fruit. Haman says, they don't contribute anything to society. It's okay. You won't lose out on anything. V'shem atamar ikam indin san minayhu. And maybe you're going to say that, like, there's a certain province that's made up of them, and you don't want to, like, break up their kingdom. Don't worry, they're everywhere, everything, your kingdom will stay united, it'll stay intact, it's fine. Their laws are different. They don't eat from our foods. They don't marry our women. And they don't have their women marry us. So Haman says that the Tamil ain't no sin. They don't observe the king's laws. They waste the year away with, the Mavarshan says, Shabbos Hayom and Pesach Hayom. All the time they're like, oh, today's my holiday, I can't work. Oh, today's my holiday. Like, made me laugh, made me think of, like, story, like, people go to, I have someone I grew up with, his father went to public school and used to tell, he was like a very funny guy, and he always told the story, he went to public school as a kid, and he always was like, yeah, now it's my holiday. And they would say, okay, whatever, he's Jewish, there's a lot of holidays. So he, like, made up a holiday. What do you call it? I forgot what he called it. Like some wacky name. And he's like, oh yeah, it's my holiday. And they're like, okay, you take off school. You know, that's all I'm saying. It's like, oh, they take off all the time on vacation. Like, stop already. Like, they have to go to work already. Right? V'lamelech ain't shavu l'hanichom. There's no benefit. They mock the throne. So don't just leave them alone. You actually have to get rid of them. If a fly falls into their drink, they throw it out and drink the wine. Adoni ha'melech no gei b'kosu she'achah mehen. If you, the king, who is an Ovid of Azara, which would make the wine, Yai Nesach, and Asr drink from, you touch it, they're going to throw it away, they're not going to drink from it. So these are the, according to Gemara, he used all these, maybe it was just an argument, and he really had his personal reasons why he was against Mordechai and the Jews, or maybe he also believed it, and from all these different perspectives, he was, you know, pointing out the bad side of Bnei Yisrael, which I feel like all these points make us stop and think for a minute. You know, like, how do we relate to these things? How do we relate to our Yomim Tovim? How do we relate to contributing to society? How do we relate to all the things? He used it l'ra, we should use it l'tov, and we'll continue next time. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Isn't that interesting? And what's interesting